This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 98 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe if you have not already. Greatly appreciate that, as always. Really excited for today's episode. Really fitting that on the week that we released the Fuel Your Performance kit from Julian, that he is the guest on today's show. With that said, we will be skipping this week's nutrition tip from Julian, considering that the entire episode is a giant nutrition tip. Really, really thrilled to have him on. Been putting a lot more attention on trying to build the exposure and the, you know, recognition and I guess just the awareness of what he's doing with Challenger Nutrition to everybody. And I think having him on the show, having his segments weekly on the show with nutrition tips, the ebooks and things like that is going to be a really great way to do that, to get more of you guys aware of what he's doing, to get more people doing the nutritional programming and to join in on the success that we're having with the athletes and stuff like that. So really happy to have him on. He's been with me and with Challenger for a little over 2 years now, and bringing him on was great. You know, anytime you have a business and you know you're looking to eventually add people on to come on with you, you know, it's important to make sure that they have the same goals and their work ethic aligns with what you do. And he's always, you know, passionate about what he does, and he puts a great quality of care into it. So bringing him on was a no-brainer. As someone who owns a business, to have somebody like that, be the first person you bring on is huge. The more that this grows, having that first person you bring on is a big piece of the foundation. Bringing a guy, and I haven't even announced this yet, but I will. I have a new young coach that just joined in, Sean Gibney. Sean has done work with me over with New Jersey City University, one of the D3 programs that I brought on last year to handle their training. You know, recently bringing Sean on is now the second person that I'm bringing on board with Challenger. But like having someone like Julian to, you know, help set the example of what it means to come on and what it means to him, and the level of care and the quality of what is going on here. Like, those are the kinds of people that I want to continue to bring on. So not to pump Jules's tires too much, but he's been great, and I'm excited to see where this nutrition continues to go with him leading it. You know, obviously I'm trying to do as much as I can with the platform that I have built to keep, you know, building the exposure of it. But, you know, he is leading it from the perspective of the content and all of the programming and stuff like that. So, you know, really, really excited for that. You guys are going to love having, you know, getting to hear from him today on a variety of different topics. If you haven't yet, go check out the Fuel Your Performance Kit ebook that was just released on Sunday. You guys will love that. A lot of great feedback on that so far. He did a fantastic job with that. If you haven't already, check out Monday's Meathead Monday, episode 97, talking about the pitfalls of getting a little too specific when it comes to chasing metrics with young athletes in terms of sport metrics. You know, getting them stronger and faster generally will help with that. Talk a lot about that. Carlton Salters was episode 96 the previous Wednesday. Check that out if you haven't yet. And coming up after this week, we'll have Mike Whiteman, Hound Strength, and Lee Taft the week after that. Just really great guests lined up going forward. We're rolling through with some great guests as always. So without further ado, I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Julian. If you have any questions, feel free to DM either of us. If it's something nutrition related and you get to me, I can direct it over to him. Like I said, get that book if you haven't yet. And as always, I will talk to you guys next time. Peace. All right, everyone. Excited to have on Julian Locasto. As you guys all know, I hope you do at least, or else you haven't really been paying attention on any kinds of social media. Julian is the head of nutrition at Challenger and also head strength coach here. Kind of been working with me for the last 2 years, and we've been doing some great stuff, and I've wanted to have him on for a very long time to kind of get in on some of the nutrition stuff. Let him kind of go in on some, you know, fact or fiction type things and just really kind of give you guys an idea of what he's doing with our athletes here at Challenger. And, you know, we've kind of been slowed up a little bit with all of the, I'm not sure exactly if I remember off the top of my head when this episode is going to go live, but if you're listening to it, it's being recorded during quarantine. So that has slowed us up a bit in recording it, but here we are. Jules, welcome on. Excited to have you.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Really appreciate it. And I'm glad we could finally get this going.
Yeah, absolutely. I have gotten, you don't even know how many questions I've gotten about doing like a nutrition type episode. And as I alluded to a couple seconds ago, we planned to do this originally, I want to say a month or two ago. And then obviously things kind of got thrown in a whirlwind a bit with all that's going on with the coronavirus. But I've gotten some questions even since I posted on Twitter that you were going to come on the show. And it's definitely a topic that people really want to, you know, hear us get into and hear you get into. You know, I think we hear it all the time from the kids that come in the facility and see things on social media on daily. And we get a good laugh at it. Like, you make a lot of funny memes about certain nutrition things. And I think I kind of want to just bring that, like, almost our conversations we have to life on the show and just really give people a good idea on, like, some of the myths and things that they hear and some of the core principles. So
let's do it. I'm all for it.
All right. Awesome. So, kind of stole this one. If anyone ever hears, ever watched like SportsCenter, they have like the fact or fiction show they do for like every sport, whatever. They call it one thing or another, but it's basically like you present a term, phrase, or topic, and the person being interviewed will respond fact or fiction, and then kind of go in on, you know, what makes it a fact or fiction type thing. So basically had a couple things lined up here, some hot topics, and I'm going to just kind of shoot them at you. You know, let me know if it's fact or fiction, if there's like a kind of like a middle ground, and kind of hit us with any of the supporting facts. So first up, carbs, and this is actually one we got, a kid came in the facility and said this to us, and you just kind of like started laughing, but carbs after 5 p.m. are bad, quote unquote, for you and can lead to excess fat.
So I'm going to probably say fiction with this one, but I'm not sure where the myth originated, but the argument is supported by data demonstrating basically daytime variations in a number of factors such as glucose tolerance. And that's kind of just like, you know, testing the body's ability to tolerate glucose depressed. Glucose tolerance is like a heavy spike before tapering down to like normal levels. And it's basically seen in diabetics. Gastric emptying, which is kind of testing whether or not an individual has normal function of muscles in the gastrointestinal system. That's kind of just muscles of this system are kind of compromised or not functioning. And that's kind of like causing, you know, upset stomach, vomiting, all these different things, and kind of resting metabolic rate. So basically they tested the bodies post prandial. So that's kind of like after the period of lunch or dinner. And that's kind of like their metabolic response to food. So it showed that there's like a thermic response to food, and the satiety of that food was lowest at nighttime in comparison to daytime eating. So consequently, that can contribute to overeating at night. And what is the most common theme you hear among people in the nutrition space? Carbs are bad and cause us to get fat. So the rationale behind this is I need to eliminate carbs at night, which in turn is just a Band-Aid. It's not a solution to the problem whatsoever. So because people are just reducing their total daily caloric intake, the issue with this study, though, is that it is heavily skewed because it's mainly supported through animal studies. And during human trials, though, the only individuals that were at risk were those that were night shift workers and suffered from NES, which is a nighttime eating syndrome. Gotcha. So ultimately, the issue that surrounds nighttime eaters are people that are not taking in enough nutrients that they need during the day. So consequently, when you eliminate starchy foods like carbs, such as rice, pasta, potatoes from your diet with your dinner, you're negatively affecting your level of satiety as well as your blood sugar levels. And this will ultimately result in you reaching for that sugary, sweet solution because you're still hungry. And this is where we start to crave things, and all that comes from under eating or lack of nutrients present that we desperately need.
Gotcha. So it turns into like we like I've had this discussion with you before, and I've heard you explain this, and I've secondhandedly explained it to people as well. The idea of like fasting or no carb diets or any of these things, essentially they all, and what people don't realize, they think a lot of this stuff has magical abilities, like, oh, if I don't you know, eat for a 12-hour window, or if I don't eat any carbs, like, it's going to, you know, magically help me lose more weight. But they don't realize, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, they don't realize that what's happening is more so that they're basically just finding different ways to get themselves in a caloric deficit, right? So in yeah. layman's terms, without getting too complicated, just like to take a basic yeah. thing away from it.
Yeah, I mean, to not get so complicated with it, it's really just, you know, people just don't realize that there is no so-called quote-unquote magic pill effect. So it's not like one of those things. A lot of these modalities are really just to make it easy, it's just a calorie reduction. And so by eliminating one source of nutrient, you're essentially just minimizing your caloric intake by a large amount. And that's where you see a lot of this massive weight loss that comes from it. I mean, you hit on, like, you know, like intermittent fasting. Again, it's a large reduction in calorie intake, because you're essentially taking out an entire meal. You're saying, okay, instead of your normal breakfast and maybe snack before lunch, you're just going to wait from the last time you ate, which was probably most protocols call for about 8 o'clock at night. So, I mean, you're basically going from 8 o'clock at night to 12, sometimes 1. And there are people that even go to like 2 o'clock in the afternoon without eating. So essentially, you're skipping the first one or two meals of your day. So that's a massive load of calories that you're just not taking in. And then again, like I said, a lot of these low, like the keto diet, stuff like that, where you're completely eliminating carbs, you're just taking out an entire macronutrient itself. So instead of taking in about 300 to 500 grams of carbs in a day, you're taking all that out, and that equates to a ton of calories. That could equate to over 1,000 calories itself. So, yeah, you're essentially just reducing your caloric intake by a ton. And that's where a lot of that weight loss happens. So not to get too complicated into it, it's just a caloric reduction.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. Like, I've talked to you about my personal habits before, and I understand, like, I don't know if I would say I have a syndrome, but hearing you mention it kind of makes me think, but like, I love to eat big meals at the end of my day. I don't know if it's like a celebration for like all the work I just did, or like I want to relax and like watch TV and like kind of decompress. Like, I just like to have big meals, and I've told you this. And I think I've mentioned this on a couple shows recently, but I have, as the date of this recording, I've lost like 24 pounds since, I'd say, over the course of 2.5 months maybe, and I want to lose like another 20 probably. But anyway, I have still stayed with my, and this is like kind of like, I find it funny because it would like make some people pull their hair out. Like, I'm eating like 300 or 400 grams of carbs for dinner, like totally just enjoying my big dinner still, and I'm losing weight. And what it comes down to for me, I guess, to kind of provide some context for this, is like, I feel that if I eat small meals throughout the day, I'm going to have all the, and I track my calories, so I know this for a fact. I'm going to, let's say if my maintenance calories were 3,000, just for argument's sake, I'm going to have 2,200 throughout the day, and then get home and only have 800 for dinner. If I eat that little bit of 800, it's like throwing a little bit of oil on the fire, and it's going to just explode, and I'm going to want to like eat my entire kitchen. So if I don't leave myself the opportunity to eat a bigger meal just because of my personal desires, like, I know it's not going to work for me. So I end up being in like this intermittent fasting type style just because I like bigger meals, and that's what works for me. But like, in your mind, how much of it comes down to just like what your preferences are, like what you can handle? Like, for me, that's just a way that I can make sure that I'm in a deficit. Like, I have to do it that way, or else like I'm not going to last for the long haul.
First of all, I agree. I 100% think it comes down to preference. When it comes down to anything in the so-called nutrition space, a lot of what happens in a diet is mainly due to preference. And I like to do this a lot with any of the athletes that I work with, or anybody in general that I work with. If your diet is not based off your personal preference, you're never going to stick to it. So at the end of the day, whether you like to eat two or three massive meals a day, and or you like to eat six meals a day, it doesn't really matter. It's based on your preference, whether or not you can handle that for a long term, especially when it comes to dieting as for fat loss, because a lot of the reasons why fat loss journeys or fat loss, you know, experiences end up being a short process for a lot of people is because simply because they don't like the term dieting. And I feel like when you're so-called stuck in this mindset of dieting, people have a negative mindset towards it. So when you stop thinking of it as a diet and you start setting yourself up for success by just going off of your preferences, I think that's when you see a lot of these success stories. So for you, you've been able to kind of have your success based on the way that you've been eating. And that's just basically because you enjoy eating that way. Yeah. So a lot of people, you know, they can't stick to something for long term because they have somebody in their ear telling them that what they're doing is not good and they need to be doing the opposite. Because, I mean, I think for the majority of people, I mean, you know, you hear fat loss and the first thing that a so-called quote unquote Instagram guru would say would be, you know, you have to eat 5 to 6 meals a day to spike your metabolism so that way you can trick your body into losing the weight. And it's like you couldn't be farther away from the truth. So, again, I do agree with you that, you know, it's all about preference. And I feel like that in terms of, you know, if success with any type of nutrition goal is going to come down to preference.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I would never recommend, like, you know what it is too? Like, we've talked about this before too, like the habits you kind of get into based on your upbringing. Like, that was just something. And listen, I'm the first to tell you, like, his mindset on this, like, wasn't the right mindset. Like, my dad would look at me and be like, all right, like, we want to lose weight. Like, we're only going to have a big dinner. You're not going to eat all day and they're going to have, and his outlook on it was like, he didn't know, like, oh, calories in, calories out, less, like, he just chalked it up to the fact that if you didn't eat all day and you had a big dinner, you were going to end up just eating less. You would get, like, there was only so much you could eat in that one sitting, that if you limited yourself to the one sitting, that, you know, you would undoubtedly eat less than what you need. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you could only eat in that one little window, like, that was just what we did. And I don't know if it was like that coupled with, like, I am just miserable when I try to eat small meals throughout the day. Like, I get, like, the little, it's almost like, you know, revving up the car engine for a little bit and you don't let it get on the track to drive. Like, that's, like, how it is for me. Like,
if you get hungry.
Yeah. And, like, you know how it is. Like, we're moving around all day. We're doing this. We're doing that. Like, I don't know. I don't like sitting down and eating. But anyway, not to get fixated on this too much. The next thing I had, and this is kind of semi-related to what we just talked about, but carbs are the enemy when it comes to weight gain, and you want to cut carbs out to lose fat.
Fiction. Total fiction. And I mean, this stems largely from, you know, two main issues that I notice with fat loss clients. One is people overeating and not tracking their intake properly, and two, not understanding hunger cues. And I think part of the problem that I see with people, whether it be with their fat loss goals or muscle building goals, is people don't know how much food they're taking in on a day-to-day basis. And we see this a ton, like, firsthand with a lot of the athletes or clients that, you know, we tend to start seeing on a day-to-day basis is, you know, the first thing I do with a lot of my athletes or clients is I have them start tracking their intake. Why? Because, you know, a vast majority of people out there don't know how much they're really eating. And once they do, a lot of them get that wake up call seeing that, you know, they're taking in way too much. And then the problem is that most are, like, told that if you want to lose weight and you have to cut out carbs. And I always like to circle back to the thing that says, like, you know, carbs are not the problem. The problem is you're overeating and in a caloric surplus causing you to gain that weight. And, you know, back to my second thing is another problem that I notice is I mentioned earlier is understanding hunger cues. So we're programmed from a young age to eat when hungry and to stop when we're full, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like,
yeah. Or if you're Italian, you eat till you can't move.
Exactly. You eat till you can't move and then you go to sleep. And then yet in the US, we tend to unlearn this unwritten rule. And instead, we eat until we're full. So throughout other countries and other cultures, we see different differences in this. So like throughout India or Ayurvedic traditions, they advise eating until 75% full. The Japanese, they practice harahashibu, which is like eating until you're 80% full. Like the Islamic guidance from the Quran indicates that excess eating is a sin.
So it's kind of like, you know, RPE for eating, basically, like what's your rate of perceived exertion?
Yeah.
Like, okay. That's cool. Yeah, I didn't know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like, you know, all these different cultures, like the Chinese specific eating until like 70% full, like the Prophet Muhammad, you know, described the full belly as one containing one third food, one third liquid, and one third air, which is essentially nothing. And then there's, you know, German expression that says tie off the sack before it gets full, completely full, you know. And then, you know, there's a lot of different sayings like, you know, drink your food and chew your drink is an Indian proverb that, you know, encourages us to eat slowly enough and chew thoroughly enough to liquefy our food and move our drink around our mouth and thoroughly taste it before swallowing. And when someone is, you know, finishing food in France, they don't say I'm full. Rather, they say I have no more hunger. So basically, you know, in a nutshell, like countries outside the U.S. emphasize that eating should be pleasurable and done in the company of others. And noticing any trend here, you basically look at it and we say that we are consistently shoveling and overindulging and wondering why we have one of the largest obesity ratings in the world. It all stems from having an understanding for hunger cues.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I even remember, like, I hate to keep doing this, but, like, consider this episode, like, half of the listeners learning and half of me kind of learning. But, like, I remember just the things you say make me think of things that I've done throughout my life. And I remember, like, catching myself at certain times, like, when I was in high school or whatever, like, the eating you do, and I guess we can kind of go into this a little bit too later on, but like the stress eating or like, you know, eating when you realize that, like, I don't know, like I remember I was excited for something and then it didn't happen. So my thing I turned to was like, oh, okay, like I'll go eat. Like, all right, no, dude, like, okay, just because you're upset and disappointed, like, doesn't mean like that should be like your outlet. Like, yeah. go do something else. Like, that is just crazy. Like, you have these cultures that literally look at eating as like another part of their regimented, like disciplined part of society. And a lot of America is just like eat until the wheels go off, like just eat until you're really full. And you talk to a lot of people and it's becoming more popular now to know what you're consuming calorie wise and stuff. But like, you really have to get comfortable with the idea that, and I've gone through this with my weight loss recently, like there are times, and I don't even say there are times, every night when I eat my dinner, even no matter how big it is, like I could still eat more afterwards, but I have to put the thing down and look and say, like, all right, like that's done. Like, that's all I have for today. Like, it's time to just like go get my mind off of food and go and figure something out. Like, it sounds sick that like I have to do that, but like that is part of like, in my experience at least, like you have to have that discipline.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, yeah, like I was kind of alluding to, it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, we're kind of in this culture where we've kind of gone against the grain a little bit. And, you know, especially when it comes to producing and manufacturing a lot of these, you know, unprocessed foods that we see in marketplaces. I mean, you see soda's gone up in certain places, and, you know, they've mandated that they decrease the serving sizes that they sell in certain states because of the fact that it had gotten so crazy. I mean, yeah, we see it as a constant reminder that, you know, we're kind of trending in the wrong direction. And that's kind of the two main points, though, that I've been, you know, trying to hit home with a lot of clients that are trying to lose weight, is that, you know, a lot of it boils down to understanding your hunger cues and then just understanding that, you know, you're taking in a lot more than you really think you are. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. I mean, if we want to even go the opposite route, and, you know, for people that are, I mean, most of the guys that we see at the rink, they're trying to do the opposite. They're trying to put on weight.
Yeah.
The opposite goes for them as well. Yeah. I mean, the opposite goes for them as well. It's like, you know, the issue is they don't understand how much they're really taking in.
That's like, yes. Like, oh, I eat a lot. I like, okay. You're yeah, like, oh, yeah, dude. Like, really? You sure about that?
I won't put names to the people that I'm going to talk about, but you know, I've seen a couple of kids that like, you know, I'll start working with them and then I'll have them actually just start writing down the food. I won't even have them track it. Like, I won't even have them track it. I'll just have them give me a log of what they eat. And then I can tell from that just right away. Like, I had a client reach out to me the other day, a kid that we work with. And, you know, the first thing that I asked him, because he had mentioned before hopping on a call with me that that he had just got done eating lunch. And I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, yeah, my dad's going to go food shopping. You know, I got the food list that you gave me. I'm going to go get a bunch of stuff. I'm like, cool. What'd you eat? And he goes, oh, I had chicken and a house salad. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, where's the carbs? And it's like, you know, it's like carbs were the enemy in that sense. And it's like the only thing that he would eat carb-wise was pasta.
Mm.
And but it's like I ask him how much and he goes, oh, I had like, you know, maybe like 3 ounces and, you know, I think I had like a bowl of salad. I'm like, okay. I'm like, do you understand? Like, how do you know that it was about 3 ounces of yeah. chicken? How do you know it was about a bowl of salad? Because the issue is that, especially with kids that are trying to put on weight, and I had this problem, sadly, I had the opposite issue growing up, is I couldn't put a pound on to save my life. And, you know, the issue was, is as I was growing up, I was eating and eating. But the problem was I didn't know how much I really needed to eat. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here is,
yep.
you know, you can say that you're eating a certain amount. I could look at a bottle of Gatorade and if I drink it to the halfway point, I can't tell you how many ounces is left in there. You know, they tell you on the bottle how much is in a bottle of water. I'm looking at a Poland Spring right now. It says that it's about 16.9 fluid ounces. But how do I really know it's 16.9 fluid ounces unless I truly measure it?
Yeah.
Or track it? So that's, you know, that's kind of what I'm getting at when it comes to these things. And it's like a lot of people that, you know, get into the nutrition space, they, you know, they and they want to have a certain goal with nutrition is they like to eyeball things without actually truly measuring it or tracking it.
Yeah.
And that's yep. why, you know, even when it comes to fat loss or even muscle gain or putting on weight, you have to track your food. And that's all what it comes down to. It's not necessarily that, you know, carbs are the enemy or, you know, that they're going to make you gain weight or that cutting out carbs is going to help you lose fat. It's that tracking your intake and making sure you understand your hunger cues. Those are the two biggest things that are going to help you with fat loss, especially, or putting on weight.
Yeah. That's really well said. And I think I could even, like, I guess to provide the opposite side of the spectrum as someone who always tries to lose weight, like just being a big kid my whole life and a big adult now, just like, it's tough. Like, you need to really know, like, people say to me all the time, and like, I try to explain to them, like, oh, like, why do you have to count everything? Like, why can't you just, like, go eat and just let your body tell you? Like, I don't trust my body enough to know, like, if you've done that for a few years where you know every single thing you're taking in, like, it is uncharted territory. I've never, I can say this with confidence, like, I've never maintained proper eating and good eating without counting stuff. Like, the only time I wouldn't count things is if I went on a week vacation and I said, all right, I'm going to just enjoy myself a little bit. But, like, odds are, if you were to ask me, I'm eating way more than I think I am. And, like, when it comes down to it, when a kid tells us that they're eating a lot but they can't gain weight, like, it's an easy answer. You're not eating as much as you think you are, or at least as much as you need to gain weight. And if someone tells you, like, if I told you, Jules, like, I need help, like, I'm trying to lose weight, like, but I'm not counting anything, like, I feel I'm eating less, why am I not losing weight? You'd be like, all right, you're probably eating more than you need to be or more than you think you are. It's like, it's pretty simple when you just break it down that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's just a really easy outlook to have once you understand, like, what you just explained.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really not as tough as people really make it out to be. There are some, you know, some underlying conditions that people might have that might make it hard. Like, you know, the only case that I could really bring up off the top of my head that would make fat loss complicated is if you have some type of hormonal issue going on and that's causing you not to lose weight. I mean, take, for example, I mean, my mom... for many years has had issues with, you know, losing weight all of her life just because of genetics and a lot of the issues that she had underlying. And I mean, a lot of women in particular that have fat loss issues, or a lot of certain men that have fat loss issues, a lot of it comes down to hormonal issues. So it's not necessarily – sometimes it's not as easy as, you know, eat less and you'll lose weight. Sometimes it's a little bit harder than that. But for the most part, you know, it boils down to making sure you're in a caloric surplus and making sure you're eating less than you would normally take – than you would normally put out energy-wise. It's pretty self-explanatory for the most part. I obviously, like I said, there's some little small – things that boil down to it that might, you know, make it a little bit more complex, but they, you know, for the most part, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I have these listed as two bullets, but I think it'd be good to put them together because I think they're two things that are usually misunderstood. So I'll hit you with it. They're macronutrient related. Carbs are extremely important to athletes and especially important to those who are highly active and trying to gain weight. And when trying to gain weight, you should consume more protein than any other macronutrient, almost 1.5 times your body weight in grams. High amounts of protein are the number one factor in weight gain. So two separate ones there.
Cool. All right. So I'll attack them one at a time. And if I get super, super sciencey and you don't understand what I'm saying, just kind of stop me and ask me.
I gotcha.
I tend to like go off on tangents and, you know, people don't understand what I'm saying sometimes, but you know, I'll try to make it as simple as possible. But, to attack the first one, you know, I'm going to say, you know, carbs are extremely important to athletes and especially for the everyday person as well. So I'm going to say that's a fact.
Yep.
You know, it's in short, we need glucose to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, energy transfer depends on it. So tissues such as your brain and red blood cells, which can't make their own glucose, need a continuous supply available for us. Our brain alone needs 130 grams of glucose a day.
Mm.
So we can get this from our diet more or less. And, or when we can get this from our diet or when carbohydrate intake is low. So when we are fasting, since, you know, we brought that up before, when intake is low and we are fasting, there is a process called gluconeogenesis and ketosis that can provide what we need, so it can provide that glucose, assuming we have enough protein and fat to process through different substrates in our body. So without getting too far off topic, carbs are the fastest acting source of energy transfer in our body, but we don't store much of them. So for instance, a 150-pound person who has 15% body fat carries about 22.5 pounds of stored fatty acids. They can only store 1.1 pound of glucose in their entire body.
Hmm.
Think about that now in terms of calories. That's the difference between carrying almost 92,000 fat calories on your person versus 2,000 carbohydrate calories. So the fat would last you a very long time. And, you know, the carbs, they'd probably barely last you a day. So this means that glucose availability for energy transfer is largely dependent on what you take in from your diet. So carbohydrates,
it's not going to hang around. It's like you can't like store it.
It's not going to hang around.
Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, we take in carbs. I mean, you know, they say take in carbs, a good amount of carbs before you go work out. Probably about, you know, halfway through your workout, you're probably feeling drained and you don't have as much. That's because, you know, that glucose is used very quickly, especially with athletes that are doing, you know, quick and, you know, especially if we're doing like a one rep max, for instance, a lot of that glucose is being used right away. So carbohydrate intake will depend on a few factors. Now, it's going to depend on how big or how small someone is, how much lean mass or body fat they have, how active they are, how intense, long lasting and or frequent their activity is, how old they are and what stage of life they're at, intake levels of other macronutrients, genetics, the list goes on and on. So let's take another example. So a muscular 17, 19 year old kid who's a high level basketball player playing for his high school team in season, playing 2 to 3 games a week, practicing 3 to 4 days a week, and maybe working out with us 3 to 4 days a week. A week, probably they'll probably benefit and perform at a top level with more total energy and carbs in their diet, rather than a sedentary 68-year-old who does Tai Chi once a week and will need less overall energy and, you know, relatively fewer carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in short, it's a fact. You need it regardless of what your methodology is. Doesn't mean that, you know, we hate on the keto diet people. It just means that, you know, for the majority of people who need it, especially athletes who are extremely active, they're going to be the ones who need it more than other people do, just because their energy demands are higher. And because we do not have a high availability of glucose to supply our energy stores, we need higher levels of glucose intake through carbohydrates in our diet.
Yeah. Got it. Well, okay. So you mentioned the reference or the difference between the dichotomy between the highly active athlete and the maybe, you know, more sedentary, you know, middle age or even older, type of person who's kind of coming to you, like two different areas there. How key is it? Like these athletes need to understand, like you mentioned 3 to 4 times a week with us, like their activity level is so friggin' high. Like, I've seen this personally with me. Like, you kind of said to me, like, listen, dude, like, you got to do some cardio. Like, it's going to kind of help you a little bit. And, like, I've been on an absolute mission with cardio since I've been home for quarantine. It's, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, I just got addicted to it. And I guess seeing the weight loss come off every week, like, has made it easier to kind of buy into. But it's just, like, it's nice. It gets rid of my stress, whatever. Anyway, no one really gives a shit about what I'm doing. what I've noticed, though, is, like, I've gotten to start, you know, I've been competitive with my calories on my Apple Watch, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the opposite side of things, where I need to burn more because, like, maybe I'm not as active as the kid doing 4 practices a week and 3 to 4 lifting sessions, going through school all day, et cetera, et cetera. When these kids are they're these hard gainers, like, and I know I have a lot of listeners that are either coaches dealing with these type of kids or these kids themselves, like, just the carbs are so, so key to them, right? And they don't really understand that. Like, they don't, just like they underestimate how much they're eating, or I'm sorry, they overestimate how much they're eating, they underestimate how active they are. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I love to use basketball players as an example because they're probably the most active athletes that I've been around, obviously, because I was a basketball player myself. And, you know, The extreme example that I used with the 17-19-year-old is probably the more accurate depiction of what a week for a high-level basketball player looks like. Mm. Because of the fact that, you know, we're basketball players are always out doing stuff, and we're constantly, you know, the leaner kids in the group. I mean, you put a basketball player in a room with football players, you know that the guy's a basketball player, or that he's a track athlete, because they're typically on the leaner side. But the problem with hard gainers specifically is, again, I think this circles back to what we just spoke to with the topic before. I mean, a lot of what it comes down to is realizing that you're not eating as much as you should be eating. And, you know, especially when it comes to being extremely active, like I said before, your energy demands are just that much higher than the average person. You know, I could sit on my couch all day and I would barely need anything. I would just need just the basic amount of food just to kind of get me through the day. Like a sedentary individual who literally sits down and does nothing all day, your energy demands are really not that high compared to an athlete who's training like in the gym 3 to 4 times a week, practicing with his team in season 3 to 4 days a week, and then having extremely high level activity with games and maybe tournaments. You know, we see it a lot with the hockey players that we deal with. They have tournaments like almost every weekend when they're in season, and they're playing at least 5 to 6 games in a 2-day span. That is a lot of demand on your energy levels as an athlete. Yeah. You have to be fueling yourself with something. Your glucose levels are your glucose levels are probably shot by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So you need to be fueling yourselves in between work, and also maybe even during a game. I always like to throw people in with like either, you know, maybe if they're a really hard gainer. This doesn't apply for everybody, but if they're a really hard gainer and, you know, the food isn't doing it, that's when I'll kind of go to like, you know, some type of like intra workout shake or like a carbohydrate like filled drink, like in between like activity levels. But you know, you gotta be fueling your energy levels, especially when you're that high of a, when you're that high level of an athlete, where you're basically playing. I mean, with the Hitmen guys that we work with over at the rink, I mean, some guys are telling me, you know, the high level guys are telling me that they're playing at least 3 games in a day, and some of them are playing back to backs. So it's like you have to be doing something in between that time to make sure that you're refueling your body in order to play at a high level.
Yeah, exactly. Especially like when you're maybe practicing and then you're going to change the locker room and you're coming up to lift. Like you mentioned before, it's like the body doesn't work with, at least with the, you know, you mentioned with the glucose, like needing the, it's like if you left your truck in the garage and when you got back out there, the gas was gone. Like, that's kind of, it's not like you could just leave it in there and the gas will just be there for when you need it. Like, you have to consistently kind of keep it rolling. So this brings me to, and this is a kind of a good segue that I didn't even mean to do it like this, but I guess it worked out. You should consume a good meal an hour or two before strength training or sports performance activity. If fact, what would you recommend?
So this is going to be a it depends situation.
Okay.
But if I – so for pre-workout nutrition, obviously, you know, the effects of consuming carbohydrate are mixed kind of with the literature, with some research suggesting carbohydrates have a role in obviously aiding performance, and others showing no benefits at all. So in practice, though, I've found that individual response is equally mixed. So some people seem to get a benefit by consuming different amounts of carbs pre-workout for certain types of training, and others don't. It tends to be very individual. So obviously, you know, for people that are listening to this, feel free to kind of experiment with it. But considering, like, you know, you can take it too far and cause problems. So if you eat obviously too much too soon or near your workout, you may experience, you know, gastrointestinal discomfort like stomach pain or, you know, mild reactive hypoglycemia, which is, you know, low blood sugar levels during training. And, you know, anybody who's experienced low blood sugar during training, it does not feel good. You literally feel lightheaded. You feel like you're going to pass out. So it's never a good thing. But, you know, if you don't eat for a very long period of time, especially if you're, you know, missing meals. I know a lot of people that I work with who have the tendency to not eat at all before they go train. And, you know, some of them have really good workouts, some of them don't. But if you tend to be that person that misses a meal that you're used to having, you might get a little fatigued early, especially if you're doing a long workout. Finally, whether you're dieting or not may also play a role as well. So a 2017 study found that a group of lifters who consumed 28 grams of carbs prior to and after training, compared to a group that consumed 28 grams of protein prior to and after training, had improved muscular endurance after 8 weeks of dieting. That said, it's important to know whether simply, you know, having 56 grams of carbs per training day that the other group didn't was the cause of the difference in the performance, or whether it was just, you know, the timing of the carbohydrate itself. You know, however, it may be a safe decision to simply ensure some amount of carbs is consumed 1 to 2 hours pre-workout in an easily digestible form while dieting. You know, so it can kind of go either way. There's no real evidence that shows that it's a necessity, but there is, you know, on the other hand, there is evidence that does show that, you know, in certain studies that it has boosted performance. So I think it's highly individual. You know, I've seen kids that literally, and I've done it myself, you know, I've had massive carbohydrate meals where I've had literally about, I want to say 50 to 90 grams of carbs before I worked out. And then, you know, I've had days where, you know, I've literally haven't eaten a single gram of carb before I even worked out and I just had protein. You know, either way, I've had good workouts and I've had bad workouts. So it's, like I said, it's going to be largely dependent on the individual.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. It's a, obviously, the best ground is middle ground when it comes to answering these questions. If there is a case where that, you know, can be a thing. We kind of already touched on this. So I guess you could just kind of give it a fact or fiction answer. And it's been, you kind of hit on it like 42 times already. Your activity levels have minimal impact on your energy balance and need to calorie intake. If you've been listening to this show for the last 40 minutes and you don't already have an answer to that question before Julian gives you one, I'm very disappointed in you.
So, I mean, this is kind of where there's a middle ground. So obviously the energy balance equation is one of the key factors in developing a nutrition plan. I mean, on one side, you have your total daily energy expenditure, which we've talked about multiple times today. So that makes up a few different things, though. So first off the bat, we have our EAT, which is our exercise activity thermogenesis. You know, putting it simply, that's kind of the energy, you know, that's expended, calories burned through structured exercise or training. Obviously, next you have your thermic effect of food, which is, you know, your thermic effect of food is the energy that you need to expend. So the energy you need to use in order to break down the food that we're eating. And then obviously our NEAT, which is our non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And these are the things that we can do throughout the day that burn calories that isn't exercise. So, you know, fidgeting, taking the extra steps instead of, you know, parking close to the entrance, you know, standing instead of sitting, you know, things that wouldn't be considered important when burning energy, they're actually very important when taking up a large portion of our energy. Now, all of this makes up what we call our non-resting energy expenditure. And the thing that I'm going to get at is, yes, your activity levels are extremely important to this equation, and whether or not you're putting out more energy than you're taking in, especially when it comes to, you know, a fat loss phase. But I'm going to say this: if you look at the studies and you look at a lot of the information, NEAT, or our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, it actually takes up a larger percentage of that formula. So yes, it's really important for us to consider the activity levels, because that is extremely important. We can, you know, if you're having a diet. So, and I know that we've had this discussion, because I've had this discussion with you in terms of your weight loss, because you kind of came to me at one point and was like, oh, I'm not, like, I kind of stalled. Like, I kind of need, like, I've been, you know, on my diet, you know, strictly like pertaining to my macros, you know, eating on my schedules. Like, you were telling me that, you know, you were losing weight steadily and then you kind of stopped.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I told you, I'm like, you know, look at your energy, like, look at your exercise activity. Like, is you were at the time, I think you were only getting in like 20 minutes of working out, like maybe like 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
I've
been training 2 hours now since I've been home, and it made it, I'm not saying I needed to go to that extreme, but like I have the time. No. So I've been doing it, but dude, like my entire experience.
But that's what I'm trying to get at. It's like, you know, at the same, yes, energy is extremely, exercise is extremely important. Our EAT, or that exercise activity thermogenesis, is extremely important to the equation, but people underestimate our non-exercise activity thermogenesis as well. Think about it. If you're a sedentary person who literally just sits at a desk on your computer doing work all day, think about what you could possibly get out of your non-exercise activity thermogenesis if you were to just, instead of sitting, like having a sitting desk, transfer to a standing desk and stand most of the day.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when we're on our feet and we're moving, especially like when we're working with athletes and stuff, we're on our feet majority of the day. A lot of that is going to take into effect with our calorie intake as well. So, you know, we might not consider our activity level when we're just, you know, standing around and watching athletes perform. You know, we're doing a lot more during that time. We're fidgeting, we're moving around, we're pacing back and forth on the field, on the turf, and through the, we're constantly putting weights away because we have that issue where, you know, kids don't want to put their weights away. All of that is activity that we're not, you know, thinking about when we think about the energy balance equation. So as important as it is that, you know, the actual workout component, it's also really important, the actual non-exercise activity that we're doing. So, to that effect, those two are probably the biggest things that, I can say that you're probably not taking into account when you're thinking about your energy balance.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I think the example of my own personal situation, how that gave me a little bit of like a kind of spark, so to speak, you know, is a good way to think of it. All right. So the last two questions that I had were supplement based, and we kind of talked about this before we started. I do have a little supplement section towards the end, so I'm going to include those towards the bottom so we can kind of put those all together. So moving on to a little more of just a standard kind of topic based discussion, one of the biggest questions that I get and I would like to forward to you pertains to pregame practice or training and postgame practice training and nutrition. You know, what should athletes look to eat in these instances? And maybe what is some of the difference between, you know, what you're doing pre-training or practice or game and what you're doing after?
So I'm going to kind of give some quick guidelines and maybe some ideas for people to kind of, you know, base their kind of general meals off of. So when we're looking at pregame, pre-workout, pre-practice, whatever the case may be, whenever we're kind of preparing to, you know, get to do some activity, the purpose of a pre-workout meal is simple. You want to fuel your activity and give your body what it needs to perform at its peak. So, you know, I generally recommend about an hour to maybe 3 hours before. If I'm going to give you more of an accurate depiction, I'm probably going to say about 2 to 3 hours before you work out, have some sort of balanced meal or snack that includes whole grains, fruits, and veggies to fuel your muscles. So obviously you want protein in there. Don't think that I'm saying that you don't need protein in there, but it's not as big as a necessity as making sure you have that carbohydrate intake as well. So, and another big thing that I'm going to say numerous times throughout this little take here is make sure you're drinking water. The biggest problem that I see most athletes, you know, go through is they're not drinking any water whatsoever. Your body absolutely needs water. And I mean, a lot of people that have gone from not drinking a lot of water to drinking a ton of water knows the impact of how that makes you feel on a day-to-day basis. So just some general ideas for like a pre-workout that a lot of kids can take away from this, or a lot of adults or coaches that have their athletes. Whole wheat toast plus peanut butter plus banana. Very simple, very easy to have right before a game, right before a practice. And, you know, when I say before, again, I mean during that 2 to 3 hour window. Don't eat it like 5 minutes before you're going up to the gym, or
which we see, you know, all the time.
We see that all the time, where a kid will down an entire like 300 grams of rice right before they come work out, and then wonder why halfway through they have to throw up.
Yeah, like, so I appreciate the effort. That. Like, I get, like, it's better than. Yeah. I like the fact that you're trying to make some kind of change, but like, oh my God, like the kids are literally like standing outside the door because we don't let them eat inside, and they're just like shoving a peanut butter and jelly sandwich down their throat. All right, I'm ready to go. It's like, okay.
Yeah, so another couple more options that I can give you, oatmeal plus like maybe some low-fat milk and some fruit. Very simple, very easy to digest, and you know, it's going to be really great for you for that long-term effect during the gym. Whole grain cereal, low fat milk and berries, whole wheat tortillas with maybe some deli turkey and some veggies, a baked sweet potato, maybe some grilled fish and some veggies, pancakes, eggs, and mixed fruit. Really simple, really easy. And, you know, the patented spaghetti, lean meatballs and broccoli. Very, again, those are some ideas for you, some for pre-workout. If you are crunched on time, and you absolutely have to get something in, the shortest amount of time that I'm going to say that you should be eating something in is about 30 minutes to about an hour before you go to work out. And, you know, in that time period, obviously, because you need something that's going to digest very quickly and you need a good boost of energy, I'm going to recommend maybe a carb-rich food like fruit, applesauce, small bars, like, you know, they have protein bars, energy bars, pretzels, have some type of sports drink for the electrolyte content. And then, you know, they have these new energy chews, especially at the rink that we work out a lot of, they sell those a lot. So they're a good choice if you have to absolutely get something down quick. And again, water, just drink a ton of water, because that's just going to help with your overall activity and performance as well. So those are my recommendations for pre-workout. Intra-workout training, this is a like kind of like a needs-based kind of thing. Like I said, a lot of people don't necessarily need an intra-workout unless you're working out for more than an hour. So if you absolutely need something, carry around a couple bits of like sliced fruit. Again, water you should be drinking. I tell people all the time you should be taking a giant gulp of water in between sets. Just because, you know, that's like essential. But maybe some ideas for intra workout, you can kind of have some orange or apple slices, some strawberries, melon, sugar snap peas or pepper strips. Those are some really good like intra workout snacks that you can have if you're kind of feeling a little low and you kind of need a little bit of a boost. Post game, post practice, and post workout, obviously you want to be having this within, you know, within the first 45 minutes after. It doesn't have to be a massive meal. Again, you know, carbs plus protein, snack or a beverage within 45 minutes after a game, practice, training to refuel and repair the body. And again, I'm going to say this again ad nauseum, water, drink a ton of water because your body lost a ton of it during whatever workout or game that you were just in. So having those within 45 minutes afterwards is really good. About an hour to 2 hours after, you kind of want to have that bigger meal just because you're going to need it for the recovery aspect. That you kind of want to have more of a balanced mix. So this, you want to kind of have some recovery ideas. Chocolate milk, obviously, you know, the commercials you see about chocolate milk are not fiction. Chocolate milk is actually very good for you post anything. So chocolate milk is a good idea to have. Bagel with cream cheese and jelly, always a good idea. Yogurt plus granola, a fruit smoothie with yogurt, applesauce with like string cheese, cereal bar plus milk, you know, pretzels with hummus, a sports drink or a sports bar, trail mix, apples with peanut butter, and, you know, bananas and yogurt. You know, very simple, very easy stuff that you can very, very much pack with you.
Yeah. There's no excuse. Yeah.
Yeah, there's really no excuse. I mean, the issue that I see a lot with kids, especially like, you know, high level athletes that I see on a day to day at the rink is like, you know, a lot of them complain to me about the fact that they, you know, they're constantly around bad food. And it's like, you know, the simple solution to that is, you know, prepare in advance. You know, the only way you can, you know, the only way you can fail in this aspect with your nutrition is if you're failing to prepare. So, you know, preparation is key. So, you know, if you know that you're going away for a long tournament, if you know that you're going for a back-to-back, if you're going to have a long, if you're going to be playing, if you're a baseball player, you're playing nine innings of baseball, like, you know, chances are you're going to need something. Yeah. So, you know, pack it ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, especially like I was going to ask you this question when I made this outline until everything kind of, you know, shit hit the fan. A lot of the baseball athletes who are in season, they spend a lot of time on the road, but I think it's a good question to answer for, you know, anybody, in that situation. Like you gave just a great list of things that are just, you can pack and you can do. Like, what is your advice? And I think I may have, it's hard to tell when you're doing, Skype and it pauses, but I may have cut you off in the last thing you were saying. So get to that, please. But, what are some of the things you could do in these less ideal circumstances where you're traveling maybe, and you don't have things on hand? Like, what are some strategies you can use to make sure you're not like, you know, susceptible to not having anything to get, that's quality?
So obviously, you know, if you were like kind of doing this last minute and you couldn't prepare whatsoever, you have nothing on hand, and you know the only thing that's around is that's immediately around you, and the first thing that people are obviously going to see are the fast food chains because they're everywhere. Sadly, we're in America. You know, they're everywhere we go, so we can't really hide from them. There are situations where, you know, you can go to these places and find good whole nutrient sources, nutrient dense sources. But I think the biggest thing that people don't take into account, go to a convenience store. I mean, convenience stores have a ton of high quality sources, all sources that I just named. You can find pretzels there. You can find sports bars there. You can find sports drinks, trail mix, apples. A lot of these things you can find at a convenience store. And I'm pretty sure there's a convenience store in every city, every location that you go to. So that's like my immediate thing. Not saying that, you know, it's terrible to have fast food, but, you know, after an intense game or, you know, tournament back-to-backs, it's probably not the best source that you could be taking in, if I'm being completely honest. But when obviously discussing fueling for athletic performance, you know, I love to think of high performance sports car engines and how it needs fuel to function. So obviously, what type of fuel are we putting into this car? Are we putting in unleaded or are we putting in the premium? Premium is what we want in the tank at all times to keep this thing performing at its best. Now, what if we use unleaded to fuel this car? So obviously that's kind of in our situation right now. What if we used unleaded? What if we did go to that fast food chain and we had fast food? Would it still run? Yeah, but definitely not at its best, and they'd be, you know, problems over time. Our bodies also have an internal engine and we need to fuel that for its function. So food is our fuel. So if you're an athlete that has a performance sports car engine to fuel, which type of food should they opt for most often, especially after training or competition? If you want to perform at your best, it's got to be premium. So, I mean, in this instance, yes, if it's the only thing that's around, try to look for, you know, obviously nutrient dense options. So you want more lean protein, a good carb like rice, you know, potatoes, something that's going to be optimal for your performance and recovery. And then obviously fruits and vegetables. But obviously the biggest thing that I can say is go on Google, because we are in the 21st century. Go on Google and look up your nearest convenience store, because I can 100% guarantee that there is one in your area and you can find it and you can get better sources of food than, you know, your typical fast food chain.
Yeah, just takes a little bit of effort, really. The best way to I guess be prepared, like, and be willing to put that little bit of effort. Like, I remember being in situations in college, like going on trips and stuff. Like, if you wanted to and you pack stuff with you when you take the time to do it, you know, you can definitely. I mean, I was on the other extreme. I packed, like, I was using those, you might know these, I don't know if the listeners will, they had those, what the hell are they called? IsoPure, that made the glass, the drinks in the glass jars, the protein, you know what I'm talking about?
IsoPure.
Yeah. So I started to, they basically just, they sold them separately. Like, you could buy just like, they were in glass, basically glass containers, like jar. It was like a glass jar with a cap on it. And you can get it. You can get them solo at like GNC, or they also sold like packs of 12. And I started to use them a lot. They were good. They were like 40 grams of protein, in like the one little, bottle. And I remember like having my dad go get like the big, 12 pack for me. But I remember like I needed to do that because I was having issues with like my allergic reactions to whey and stuff. But I just remember like going to California for baseball in college and like not wanting to go off track and bringing like my, having my suitcase packed with Quest bars and like this IsoPure, and I had to take some out because my bag weighed too much to get on the plane. So yeah, that's like the one extreme. But yeah, no, you can be prepared. And I think this is something we stress to the kids all the time. Like, it just takes effort. And if you put the effort in, like, you shouldn't be left kind of like susceptible to be kind of stuck in one of the situations. So I think that's a great takeaway from that. And kind of moving into the last little thing that I wanted to get to, and this isn't a little thing by any means, it's very important. And I, like I said, I wanted to tie the last two factor fiction questions into this, but in a quick sense, when should athletes turn to supplements? And the last two kind of factor fiction questions I had was, you know, when trying to gain weight, turn to meal replacement or mass gaining shakes first, which, I mean, that seems like a pretty easy one. And you should aim to enhance your eating habits with whole foods and get your nutrition habits established before using supplements. So kind of just, I guess, give us a little rundown, like, you know, what are some of the things you should look to have accomplished with your nutrition before you look to supplements? And then if you are beginning to look at them, like, what are some things you should be looking at?
Okay, so obviously this is an extremely important concept that I love to hit home with athletes right away, because I feel like every time I walk into the door at the facility, the first thing that the people at the kids ask me is, should I be taking this? Should I be taking that? What kind of protein should I have? What type of creatine should I buy? Like, you know, the first thing that I get asked all the time is, what should I take? And so I actually tweeted this a while back and spoke about it briefly on my podcast as well. You know, the good thing that you should be doing first and foremost is eating whole unprocessed foods. So, you know, you have to be eating more higher quality nutrient dense foods, especially lean protein with each meal. I feel like that's the number one thing out of this entire list, because majority of the time, a lot of these kids are eating the biggest culprits that I see. The first thing that I hear kids eat before they come to work out is they love the candies. They love the fast food. And, you know, we saw one of the kids on the baseball teams that we coached would literally have McDonald's before he came into the gym. And I literally had a heart attack. So, you know, eating whole unprocessed foods is probably the number one thing. Next is drinking plenty of water. Obviously, you know, dehydration has proven to be a massive issue for our cognitive function. It also creates fatigue issues that can hinder our performance on the field, court, ice, or wherever. So, you know, drinking plenty of water is a big key point. And I think this next one is even bigger, you know, making sure you're getting enough sleep. I think one of the most powerful tools for recovery and performance, and it's extremely overlooked and underutilized, is sleep. And, you know, the biggest thing that I think you should get is, I recommend athletes get around 7 to 9 hours of sleep. So if you're doing that, drinking plenty of water and eating unprocessed foods and more whole foods, nutrient-dense foods, those are some really good things that I would start with. And another thing, and it's not as important as these three, but it's another big thing that I like to make sure kids are doing, is, you know, make sure you're training consistently and intelligently multiple times a week. Whether you have performance or aesthetic goals, you know, we have to make sure that we're doing some form of activity. And I think it should be some mixture of, you know, strength training in the weight room and some form of cardio to prioritize our cardiovascular health as well. You can do this yourself if you know how to, or I always recommend hiring a coach, because, you know, to keep for the accountability aspect, I can't stress this enough, more so for beginners. If you don't know what you're doing in the weight room or with nutrition, or have a general understanding for how to reach your goals, reach out and get in contact with a coach for whom you believe in and trust that knows their stuff. But those are the main four things that I think you should kind of have down pat before you even consider taking supplements. If you have all four of those things down, I'm pretty sure you'll see more progress in a year's worth of doing all those four things rather than, you know, taking anything. But those are like my biggest tips off the bat. You know, in terms of the fact or fiction questions that you asked me, should you aim to enhance your eating habits with whole foods and, you know, get your nutrition habits before you take supplements? Facts. Obviously, all the four things that I mentioned, are very important. But like I said, eating whole foods, you know, is probably the biggest priority, especially your protein. I think it's, you know, people underestimate I tweeted this again too. I don't like to, you know, toot my own horn, but I did tweet this also. You know, people undervalue what a home cooked meal could do for their nutrition. And I think, you know, that's probably one of the most undervalued things that we've taken for granted during this quarantine period. I mean, yes, eating out every once in a while isn't going to kill you. And, you know, I thoroughly encourage it. I'm a big believer of going out to eat that pizza if you really enjoy that pizza. But, you know, if you're an athlete that, you know, trains at a high level and, you know, competes every day, you need to be fueling your body to its maximum potential. So eating whole foods, you know, with high nutrient density is gonna help you in the long run. And, you know, to touch on very quickly on the last one, when trying to gain weight, turn to meal replacement or mass gainer shakes, I think that's fiction. Obviously, you know, if you're – will they help? Yes. But a lot of the times what people don't realize is, you know, those mass gainer shakes are very much so empty calories. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that you should be doing is making sure first you're eating in a caloric surplus. It doesn't have to be massive. But make sure that you're in some kind of a surplus to make sure that you're gaining weight at a very good pace. I think the big problem with people that are trying to gain weight is they want to gain a lot of weight very quickly. And you should try to go for the opposite, gain it at a very slow pace. Because a lot of the times if you gain it at a rapid pace, if you're gaining more than 2 pounds in a week, majority of the time it's coming way more from fat than muscle. So I like to try to aim on the slow side when it comes to gaining weight. Can shakes help? Yes. I am a big believer in super shakes, I like to call them. And, you know, it's more of a blend of natural nutrient dense sources. Obviously, you know, for people that don't know, I'm Precision Nutrition certified, so they talk a lot about super shakes. And it's just a big blend of more high quality sources, rather than your mass gainers that are over 1,000 calories in one drink. Obviously I won't bore you with the details about that, but just to touch on those a little bit, that's kind of my take on that.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think the checklist is important. So those four things, if you're listening, make sure you write those down. And I think just the one little last thing to kind of tie up on that would be the creatine question that I always get that I wanted you to talk about. What should we know about it? You know, do you recommend a type? I know we're going to talk about monohydrate and everything, but like when to take it and how does it work? Like there's a lot of misconceptions on what it is and when to, you know, maybe you should start to look at it and all that kind of stuff. So I guess kind of give us a little rundown on creatine to finish things up.
Absolutely. And I mean, creatine is perhaps the single most researched sports performance supplement of all time. You can really just consider it the GOAT of all supplements. Creatine is a completely natural compound that our bodies make naturally, just not in, you know, high enough doses to optimize sports performance. So, you know, our bodies synthesize creatine from the amino acids, arginine, glycinine, and and methionine. So creatine is naturally found in meat and fish. So obviously, you know, recommended type, I would say, you know, creatine monohydrate is the best form to take, hands down. When to take it, I'd recommend probably around 2.5 to 5 grams of, you know, creatine per day is generally accepted doses for increasing sport performance. And I'd prefer it to be taken after training with your post-workout shake or snack. If it's a non-training day, just take it whenever. But for the most part, on training days, you should be taking it after your training or after your workout with your shake. How does it work? Obviously, you know, creatine works by, you know, helping produce adenosine triphosphate or, you know, ATP. Obviously, that's our energy. So as muscular contraction intensifies and the body expends energy doing work, obviously that ATP starts to deplete. So creatine can help replenish these storages of energy and give the body a little bit of extra energy to work with. So obviously, with that being said, creatine's ability to increase work capacity can indirectly improve our strength, our muscular size, muscular endurance, and our muscular power. So yeah, just in a tidbit right there, that's what creatine is, that's what it does. And, you know, like I said, you know, it's kind of the GOAT of all supplements.
Yeah. I think that's a good point too. You mentioned like it's very highly researched, and I think some of the misconceptions about it are, you know, pretty easily kind of, you know, you can sift through them pretty easily if you just kind of do some research on it and, you know, it is sometimes looked at as like something that's bad when I guess that's people don't really have, you know, enough knowledge about it. And that was kind of like the entire thing I wanted to accomplish with this episode, which I think we did a great job of, is to make sure we kind of, you kind of hit on a lot of these myths and these kind of misconceptions to a lot of things. So I think that was huge. Especially at the last like 10 minutes, like write that stuff down, like be educated on what you're putting into your body and the kind of steps you should be taking before you do that type of stuff and what you should be looking to kind of get your hands on, beyond going to GNC and just asking one of their workers what you should do. Because believe me, I have heard like all different types of things from them and all varying types of stuff. So I would say that's probably not your best way to go.
No, it's probably not the best source, but I mean, for all of you guys that are out there that are curious about it, obviously it's, like I said, it's the most researched supplement on the market. You can't get any better than that. One of the other things that I might want to just quickly touch on is the fact that there are myths surrounding, you know, loading progressions and like protocols for it. You don't have to load it. It's just a fancy way for you to, you know, use up the whole container before you even get to it. So you don't have to load it. You know, and what I mean by loading it is, you know, they prescribe it on the bottle of creatine that, you know, you should progressively load it. So you should take maybe like more than the recommended amount for like the first week or two. I think they say they usually recommend like double the amount. So I think they would like progressively like make you have like 10 grams of it a day, which is absurd. Because they say that, you know, it will enhance the availability of creatine in your body beforehand, which is, it's completely false. It's kind of just a marketing ploy to have you, you know, basically use up the most of it before you even get to using it on a daily basis. So do not get suckered into the fact that you have to load it. And lastly, there isn't really any research about cycling off on it, but you know, like anything, if you want something to be effective, I recommend if you're going to take a period off from it, you know, kind of, you know, take the amount of time that you've been on it. So if you've taken it for about 2 months or so, maybe you should take about the same amount of time off of it, or give yourself a couple of weeks off of it, so that way you can retake it again. But just to kind of get into it, there's really no research that backs that you have to cycle on and off of it. It's not a steroid, so do not think that it is a steroid and yeah, you have to cycle off of it. Yeah, but that's basically everything about creatine.
Awesome. All right. So as I always do, closing thoughts, if you had any things you wanted to get to that we did, or kind of just a way to wrap up what we talked about, the floor is yours, my friend.
No, honestly, I think, you know, if I had to come down with one thing, I think it's just making sure that if you're going to be serious about your nutrition, make sure that you understand your goals. I like to say this on everybody who asks me advice about nutrition. I think the first thing that a lot of athletes don't understand is what their goal is. And I mean, we see this a ton when kids come into the facility. It's always, oh, well, you know, what should I be doing for this, this, and this? But then when you go and you sit down for them and you ask them what their goals are, they have 500 different things that they want to do. They want to get lean. They want to get jacked. They want to get, you know, they want to be able to lift 1,000 pounds. You have to kind of have one concrete goal, whether it be aesthetic or strength based or performance based. You have to understand your goal and you have to be able to, you know, write actionable steps towards that goal. So if there's anybody out there that, you know, wants to achieve any of those types of goals, understand it, understand your main goal, and kind of stick to that, so that way you can create an action plan towards it.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, a common theme: preparation, having a plan, and really, you know, having a solidified way to attack what your goals are. I think it's the same as training, and it's something that, you know, more people are coming around to now, but they never really looked at it like training and how we should, you know, program and plan things out and list things out. So I think that's a great kind of way to finish things up. Jules, thank you so much for taking the time on. That was fantastic. And, you know, I'm excited to continue as we've talked about, to get more out about the nutritional stuff that we're offering and, the stuff that you're doing. I think it's great and, you know, can help a lot of people. So I appreciate your time.
Anytime, man. Really appreciate you, giving me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, brother. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles in Management podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DiFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.